doing an oral history interview for the project, The Spirit of Survival, Voices from the Depression. And the date is July 17, 1985. I'm visiting with Cecil James in his apartment at Golden Homes here in Torrington, Wyoming. And Cecil, you were born in what year?
1902.
And whereabouts?
Sedan, Minnesota. And that is the north part of the Mesaba Range. Yeah, he was a hoisting engineer.
And was that in the iron mines?
Yes.
How many were in your family, Cecil?
Well, my dad was married twice, and so was my mother. And when they got married, she had two boys, and he had two boys and a girl. But he had lost the whole family over in England with typhoid fever. Well, before he came over to this country. But he was the father of 21 children.
Yes, that's remarkable. Had he come from England, Cecil?
Yes. About 1884.
And what about your mother then?
Well, they got married over there in England. And they both came over. And he came over about a year ahead of her. And then she brought the children all over here.
Did you grow up in that area of Minnesota then?
I was 6 years old when we left Minnesota. Came to Sunrise.
Then when you got to Sunrise, did your dad take a job?
He worked for the CF&I in Sunrise until he passed away, which was 4 years later.
That wasn't very long.
No.
Did you go to school in your early years in Sunrise?
I went there till I was 10 years old, then I went to Michigan. And I went to school there till I finished the eighth grade.
Now your mother then raised you along with the other children?
My mother raised... By the time my dad died, there was two children, my sister and myself. There was 5 years difference in us. And she raised us by what you call midwife. That is, that instead of a doctor, you had a midwife that would be around when the children were born. Take care of, and that's the way she earned her living.
What caused you to leave then Michigan and come back to Sunrise?
Well, I had a half-brother out here, and he was foreman, and it was a job opening during World War I, 1917. And I came out here and went to work, supposedly to go back to school in the fall, and I never left here.
Well, you mentioned, I think you finished the eighth grade back in Michigan.
Okay.
Were you able to continue on in high school in Sunrise?
No, that was all. I went to work. Right. I went to work at that age.
Were you working right underneath in the mines?
No, I was working on the top surface, and we were stripping the rock off of the ore, and I was a brakeman, what you call brakeman fireman, on a small locomotive. They had three of them there at Sunrise, and they were hauling these rock cars from around on the open pit there at that time, above the open pit, and they would take it out and put it on a dump. There was three trainloads of them.
Cecil, you were only about, what,
15 years old.
15 years old. Did the company, wasn't there any age limit on hiring? Or
16. Somebody made a mistake.
Do you remember what you got for working? Did you work by the hour, Cecil, or by the day?
I don't remember how much an hour, but it wound up about $3.32 a day, 8-hour shift.
Then you lived with your...
My brother. For, I should judge, eight months. And I earned enough money to send for my sister and my mother to come out. And then we had a home there for the three of us.
Now, was that a company home?
Company home.
How long did you work at that job?
Just about a year. And then my brother thought that he knew that was going to be finished, see. And he got me to go into the powerhouse And then I worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
How old were you at that time?
16. And that's the type of work I followed all the way through then.
That must have been some pretty long, hard hours for
I only worked that way once a week. I was relief on a fireman one Sunday night. I go to work at 12 at 6 o'clock Sunday night. I worked till 6 o'clock Monday morning. Then I had the rest of the day off.
Susan, were there quite a few other really young kids working at that time like yourself?
Well, I was probably the youngest, but it wasn't very... They were about a year older, some of them, than I was. See, they couldn't lie on the ridge because they were born around there. See, but I told a fib on my age. You see, and we didn't straighten that out for a long time.
How long did you continue to work then, as a young man there at Sunrise?
Well, until I was married and the Depression hit.
So you worked through the 1920s.
Mm-hmm. Well, intermittently, that there was, in 1919, there was a shutdown too, and the times were kind of bad there. I don't know. I think there was some kind of a depression happened in there in the 1920s. And I worked in Barre, Nebraska, the sugar factory at that time. So I wasn't very old even then.
I think you mentioned to me that in the late 1920s, about 1927 or 28, that you were really turning out a lot of iron ore.
They were operating on a 24-hour basis all the way through the mine. And one of them shifts was on iron ore, and we were putting out about 100 railroad cars a day. And the other two shifts was strip rocking, bringing rock out of the mine. And that went out to the dump. That was a 16-hour job.
Now, you also became a hoist operator. In fact, most of your working years were a hoist operator. When did you become a hoist operator in the 1920s, Cecil?
Yeah, I would imagine about 1926 to 28 in some place.
And they were operating that hoist on steam, I think you told me.
Well, at the first part, in 26, they went to electricity. So I must have started on the hoist about 24, because I'd operated on steam, and then at 26, they converted to it.
Cecil, you described to me, and I thought it was rather interesting, of how that hoist operated. And I wonder if you could describe that.
Well, it is, we have a drum with two cables on it, reverse cables, so that one skip was coming up and one was going down at the same time. And when one was being loaded while the other one was being dumped, and they were bringing up about 10 to 12 tons each trip, and we brought it up in 55 seconds.
Now, that drum you talked about that ran the cable wound around, what was the size of that drum?
I believe it was 12 foot at the top. It was a stepped-up drum so that you started out with a lower gear, see, and then it had a climb in it.
And you sat in the engine house by that drum? Was that it?
Well, yes, in front of it with a console with all the control levers on it.
And all day long, then, you brought these
skips
up every 55 seconds?
Yes.
They would, each skip would dump its ore into a car,
into the hopper, mm-hmm. and then went through the crusher into the plant.
Were there ever any times that it became rather dangerous, or were there any particular times that you can recall that anything ever went wrong, I guess?
No, if there was anything went wrong, it was generally the operator's fault.
So you made sure nothing went wrong.
That's right. But it had all kinds of safety devices on it. And the man hoist had all kinds of safety devices on it. So that if you lose control, it would automatically stop. If you went too far, it would automatically stop. If you went into the head frame too fast, it would automatically stop. So it was really more or less foolproof, especially the last hoist that we had, the new hoist. The old steam hoist that was converted, that was a little tricky. And it would cause not some danger so much as destruction. But it had if you went too far into the head frame, it had a cutoff, and it would hook the skip into the head frame, release the cable, and the cable would fly loose. And then, of course, it had to be brought back and re-socketed and put back. Oh, yeah.
What kind of money were you making as a hoist operator?
Well, it varied. It was up a pretty good wage in 29, and then after 30, every time you'd go back to work, the wages had been cut. So I think about the lowest wage we ever got was about 32 cents an hour.
That would have been during the Depression?
Depression years, yeah.
Well, that was a pretty low wage. Could you make a living on that?
Well, everything else was accordingly. Everything else was accordingly.
Then you continued to operate as a hoist man right up until what, your retirement?
1967.
When you retired?
I retired as a hoist man.
How many years did you have in service to Colorado Fuel and Iron?
50 years and 6 months.
Quite a record.
Yeah.
How was relations between, for example, in the 1930s when it seemed like you were going back and the wages were being cut all the time, did that create some bad relations between the workers and the company?
No, it didn't, because they were so glad to get back to get a few dollars. And you didn't have a new element. You had the same old element that was there previous to the Depression. And we never even organized until the latter years when the unions came in and organized. And then the wages went up and the benefits went up. And then they increased quite a bit.
Did the company object to the union coming in and organizing?
Oh, at times, yes. They had some labor relation trouble. I had the labor board in there a couple of times. So there was some dispute over it.
When do you recall when the union did organize in Sunrise Mine?
I would say it was right around 40, I believe.
So things remained fairly quiet through the 30s between
yeah.
the workers and,
yeah.
and the
company. Yeah. And we never had a strike at Sunrise. Never.
Sunrise must have been an interesting place back at that time. Well, I wonder if you could describe it for me.
Well, it was a beautiful, beautiful mining town is what it was. And it was more or less like a family, especially during the Depression. It was a family. We would have dances and everybody would bring something to eat, you know, they'd just have a pickup orchestra, and it didn't cost anything. There wasn't any money exchanged. Somebody might have a bottle with a little home brew in it or something, but it was just like a family.
How large was Sunrise during the Depression years in the 30s?
Well, a lot of people stayed there, but all the houses were still being occupied during that time. My mother lived there all during the Depression, and the CF and I would let your rent accumulate, and they would furnish you with electricity, and they furnished you with coal, and they billed you for it after you went back to work. And the store carried a lot of the people, and they billed them after the Depression was over.
So the company tried to help the people in Sunrise?
That's right. They did help them.
And did the people feel that? Did they realize?
Yeah, they feel like it. When they got to work, they brought in I had a meeting with these people. I never owed the company store anything, but I did owe the CF&I rent from the house that my mother lived in. And I think it took me 5 years to pay that off. It's so much a month. But they made an arrangement so that it didn't hurt you.
How much was the rent for a house?
Well, I think at that time, the house we had a six-room house that time. And I think it was around $15. And it would take a ton of coal a month in the wintertime, and that was around $6 a month. And the lights run $4 to $5 because you didn't, all you had was lights and a toaster or something, you see. You didn't, no, really no ice boxes at that time.
And you bought all your groceries at the company store?
Company store or Hartville. I think we bought most of ours at Hartville from a man by the name of Gene Starrett had a store down there, and we traded with Gene most of the time. Company store was just a little higher, of course. They were given the credit, and it was a little higher after that.
Well, you got married in what year?
1930.
Where was your wife from, Cecil?
Wheatland. Wheatland, Alabama.
What was her name, maiden name?
Sutherland. Her father was a cattle buyer, horse trader and cattle buyer.
You got married, and I think you told me that when you married her, you told her that the mine would never
shut down. We were married 2 months, and it was shut down.
Was that quite a shock to you?
Quite a shock to me, and quite a shock, because them days you didn't accumulate much money at the wages we were getting. It wasn't much accumulation, and kids were buy a car, you know. First thing you bought was a car. I bought my first car in 1924.
New?
Model T Ford, new, $600.
What did you do when, here you are, your young bride and you are here, and the mine is closed down, you're out of work, you don't have any money coming in, what do you do?
Well, my wife's dad invited us over to spend the summer with him. and that's what we've done. We had a little money, and we went to Casper a few times, looked for a job. We looked for work during the first year, but not very hard.
Because you thought the mine would
reopen again, see.
When did it reopen, please?
Well, I think it was about 6 months later. We opened for a couple of months. That was what happened all during the 30s. It would open for 6 months, maybe 3 months, close for 6 months, and open, and then all of a sudden it was closed for 15 months. And that's when I went to Boulder Dam, went to work for a while. And then my wife's dad bought a truck and put me to trucking cattle. And I'd done that all that year until I went back to Sunrise to work.
What happened when the mine would reopen? Would they then give you a call and say, we need you to get back to work?
Get a letter or a phone call.
And you'd always go back?
Sure, we'd go back. Cause
why did you go back?
We always thought it was going to be steady one of these days, which eventually did, but it took a long time.
What was the hardest part of those years for you and your wife, Cecil, in the 30s?
Well, I don't know. It didn't seem so hard then. I think we were young enough, it didn't mean anything, only that we didn't have much money, and we couldn't, 1 year we couldn't even afford to buy the license for the car, so we had to let that set. And those were the things that was a little tough. At that time, we thought they were pretty tough, but really they weren't so tough, I guess.
So did your wife work out, Cecil?
Well, she became a beauty operator during that time. She worked for her mother, and then she went to Denver and took a course down there. She became a beauty operator, so it worked out. She might never have done that otherwise, see?
Well, then what were some of those jobs you were doing, Cecil? You were
Well, I tell you, they had some WPA jobs. We had one up in a tunnel up on the Laramie River. We was cutting a tunnel up in there to... But then they found out my wife was a beauty operator, so I got laid off.
You couldn't have two people working.
No. And then we cut a road, worked on the road up around this side of Hartville. We made a cut there by hand through the hill. We used horses and plows and slips, picks and shovels.
What kind of money did you get from the WPA?
Well, I can't remember, but it wasn't very much. It was just something to...
Did you ever count up the number of jobs you had during the 30s season?
No, I didn't, but I had quite a few of them. And none of them would last, you know. It's just like those out at the Bowler Dam. They wouldn't last because they would hire you for a certain job, and then you get laid off, and you got to go back to the employment office and wait for another call.
But you always had work.
Well, most of the time, I had something to do. I even tried to be a sheep herder, and they said I needed experience for that.
Where was that?
That was over Wheatland.
But you did try.
Or? I did try. Yeah, I tried for everything there was. I worked the sugar factory. I helped put the roof on that Wheatland sugar factory in July month when it was about 100, about like it is now.
Did the rest of the men in Sunrise who worked at the mine, did they do about the same as you did?
No.
Would they leave Sunrise?
A lot of them stayed there. As long as the company furnished, let them have groceries, they stayed there. A lot of them stayed there.
Would that get them into debt then?
Yeah, that got them into debt. And after the mine went back to work, it took them a long, long time to get out of debt.
Wonder why they stayed there. I'm curious.
No, it wasn't really any work that you could get in comparison to what you had there, see? But I don't know. It just, they had always had that hope. They had that hope that mine was, it had operated so long and so good that they figured it was just a matter of time. And he stayed.
Well, during those years, and when the mine was opening and closing, times were tough for everybody. Did most of the men in Sunrise, and kind of in a general way, do you think they drank more?
No, I don't think so. Of course, it was prohibition at the beginning. Then they made their home brew, all right, but I don't believe there was very much, not as much drinking as there is today, I don't believe.
Do you think it caused families to have more problems?
It didn't seem like it. It seemed like everybody accepted it. Everybody accepted everything that was going on. I don't know. I think people were different, under different circumstances in them days. I think today it would cause a lot more trouble because I think the people have had more since that time. They've had more wages, more money to spend, and I think it would cause more trouble today than it would back in them days, because our wants weren't very great, because we hadn't been raised with too much, so we were...
What happened to the men's attitudes, the miners' attitudes? Did they become rather... depressed themselves, do you think, in any way?
It didn't seem like it. It didn't seem like it. Oh, I imagine there was times that they would probably, and maybe different people would, but most of them seemed like they had a pretty good appetite. They pretty good conditions. They had the YMCA. They kept that open all the time. They could go and play cards or bowl, and the bowling was cheap, and play pool. They could have parties in there and stuff like that. So.
You wonder what happens to, especially a community like mm-hmm. Sunrise, where everything mm-hmm. is so close, when suddenly now none of the men are working. Mm-hmm. I wonder, were the women worried?
Well, it could be that the women worried more than the men did, because they were raising families. And it was tough, and kids were graduating. You had to have... little things different. But I think keeping the YMCA open and the store open made the big difference. They figured the CF&I was still there, and they were still going to be in operation. So I think that gave them confidence in the company.
Were the men angry at the company at all?
No, I don't think.
Did they feel that the company was perhaps taking advantage of them in any way?
I don't believe they had any feelings against the company. It was just one of those conditions that was nationwide at that time, of course.
Did anybody understand what was causing this depression at the time?
Well, whether they understood it or not, I'm not sure. But of course, we blamed it on Hoover. It was blamed on Hoover. But of course, Hoover didn't have any more to do with that than anybody. It was just a condition that happened.
That the miners tended to blame Hoover.
Yeah, that was right.
Well, how did they feel then when Roosevelt became president?
Well, that was fine. That was fine because he put them back to work at different things like the CC camp and stuff like that.
As a matter of fact, you were in service.
I was in C camp. I tell you, when I went to Pinedale, I was over in Wheatland at that time. I went from Wheatland to Pinedale to the CC camp, but there was a bunch from Sunrise that went too at the same time, and I knew all of them. But the second time I went into CC camp, I was called back to work here after about 6 weeks up there at Pinedale, and I came back to work, and I worked about 2 months. And the superintendent called me in, and he says, "Now, next week we're going to shut down again." And he says, "I've already talked to the CC camp out here in Guernsey, and they want you out there." So I went out as assistant leader at that time, see, so because I'd been experienced up at Pinedale. So I got $6 a month more. I got $36 a month, and I signed. $30 went to my wife, and my wife signed that over to my mother. And that is what my mother lived on all through that time, was that $30 a month. And, of course, the rent was charged, and the coal was charged, and the lights were charged. And she was an old lady.
Well, Cecil, you were able to take advantage of the WPA, the CCC. Were there any other ways that miners could get help from the government?
Well, it was after. But the WPA, we all worked at that up there at Hartville. Most of them, we would have, most of the guys had some of that relief work there.
Did the women work up in Hartville?
No, there was nothing for them to do, you see.
What about Hartville? Always been kind of a social outlet for Sunrise,
yeah,
that people could go leave the company town. Was Hartville any different in the 1930s because of the Depression?
No, it's just pretty much the same way it is today. They had a couple of bootleggers in there, and they seemed like they had a little business, a little gambling and stuff like that. But it was pretty much the same as it is today.
What about the kids during those years? Do you think they were affected by those hard times?
I really don't think so, because everybody was in the same boat. See, if you'd have had some children with a lot of things, it would have made a difference. But everybody was in the same boat, so that one family didn't have any more than the other one. A few of the foremen had jobs, but their wages was cut so low that they really didn't make that much difference. It was a living for them. That was all the difference. But
Cecil, when did times start to get better out of the mine?
Well, really, it was 1940.
That late?
Yeah. It would be in the late 30s, and And after, when the chances of war came along, then things began to pick up. Up till that time, it was kind of slow.
Do you think the community life changed any?
Well, it did. It did after the Depression and when things got back on their feet. Then the community life changed. It wasn't the close-knit community that it was before. I don't feel like it was, because people were beginning to buy cars. They were beginning to get out more and more recreation and stuff like that.
Did you have more people come in to Sunrise?
No, it stayed pretty much stable. They never did have a big influx after the 1929. That was the big one.
Now, some of those workers were both Greek and there were Italians. Did any of those people have any thoughts of taking off and going back to Greece or Italy?
Well, the Greeks, when they came over here, they come over here with the idea of making money and going back to Greece and retire. And some of them did that. Some of the older Greeks did go back. But we had quite a few who stayed right there. And some of them passed away up there in latter years here.
Now, there had been, going back into early years, there had been differences between the Greeks and the Italians. In fact, you said that they lived in separate parts of Sunrise.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Did that Depression tend to break down some of those differences between the Greeks and the
Italians? Well, I kind of think it did, all right, because between the whole bunch, because they were all in the same category. They were all poor folks. That's what it made. It just, there wasn't any difference in them at that time, because, my gosh, after years of Depression, there was nothing left. Some of them had more savings than others, but it took those savings. See?
Were there situations of where where maybe families really didn't have enough to feed their children?
Well, I don't believe there really was at that time. If you had your credit at the store, you could get the staples that you needed. See?
Well, the company extended that credit. Could they also stop that credit at some point?
They could, yes. In fact, they would slow them down, you know, if they got carried away with, using their credit too much, buying things that weren't absolutely necessary.
Could people help each other out? Did they do much of that?
Well, I imagine there was some of that. They raised some gardens and stuff like that back and forth.
One of the things that it seems strange to me, Cecil, is that through those times when they were tough, you didn't have any interest in creating unions. A lot of union activity in those years.
Yeah,
and yet,
but
at that Sunrise mine, there wasn't any attempts to organize unions.
No, not at that time, but after they got to going, then we had two unions. They organized the... what was that first one that came in there? And then they finally wound up with the United Steelworkers. That was the last union that was.
Were there any organizations or societies that helped the miners up there? Were there any social groups or organizations?
I don't think there was any social groups in them years.
I know sometimes the Greeks might have an organization, the Italians.
The Italians had a lodge, and I imagine, maybe, I don't believe I've ever heard of Greeks having, but the Italians up there had a Dante Alighieri Society. And I think they carried a little insurance through that, kind of like the woodmen of the world at that time, too.
Well, you mentioned the YMCA was really important. What could you do at the Y?
Well, you could bowl, you could play cards. They had a card room there, and they had pool table, billiard tables, and they had the fountain. And you could just sit around, and they had a lobby there that you could sit and read magazines, papers. They had the papers all there. And the barber shop.
What about in terms of their own feelings about themselves? Do you think the men, when they didn't have work, did they at all blame themselves for that?
Well, I don't think they blame themselves, but it would probably depress them a little bit. It would probably depress them and wonder what was going to happen.
There must have been some good times in those years of Sunrise. Yeah.
They had good dances and good parties. Just like family parties, get-togethers, you know.
Did you have some rather colorful people up there?
Yes, we had a lot of. We had one fellow by the name of old Judge Tatilla, and he was a justice of the peace. And if you went before him, you was dead. There were only two sides, right and wrong. If it was wrong, you had it. Oh, he was a card, and he wrote poetry. And when we got married, and I don't know where that piece of poetry is now, but he wrote a poem about us when we got married and came back from the honeymoon. Well, he was always, always doing something. And he was quite a guy. Judge Tatilla, we call him. His name was George Tatilla, but he was Justice of the Peace. And he thought that was... And he worked for CF&I along with it.
And you mentioned another early miner. I don't know if he was still around in the 30s. He was a powder monkey, wasn't he? You mentioned that he used to crimp...
Oh, yes. In fact, Mr. Vanelli, he was a powder monkey, and then they would make up these, they called them punches. They would roll the dynamite into a roll like that and put a fuse in it. And they would make them up, and then the miners would take them with them in a bag and place them out on these rocks and bust them up, and they would crimp the caps and stuff like that.
And was this the one who crimped the caps with his teeth rather than...
Well, I can't remember that part of it, but there were a lot of miners that did that in the earlier days, crimped them with their teeth. You know.
But, were those miners pretty rough fellows, were they?
You had to be to stand on them pit banks and strip that off. And most of them were Greeks that worked in that pit part. You know. And they hung on ropes there off of the banks and with little bars and barred the loose rock down so it wouldn't fall down into the people in the bottom.
And they were mostly Greeks then?
Mm-hmm.
Did the Italians tend to work underground?
Well, they all worked underground and on the surface too. And it was more or less a kind of a conglomerate that no one nationality had certain jobs, but Greeks seemed like they went to the pit more than anybody because they had a Greek boss there by the name of Black George Costopoulos, and Bill Costopoulos' dad. He works in the Citizens Bank.
Well, who was the superintendent up there during the Depression years?
Well, in the 30s, it was Superintendent Thomas Tucker. And then in, I would say around 35 or 36, they let him out. They went to a new system of mining at that time. They went from the open pit to the underground system. And they brought a guy in by the name of Harry Wright. And he was superintendent at that time. And he was superintendent until 1945 when he passed away.
You know, Cecil, a lot of times people, in order to deal with hardships and difficulties, kind of resort to telling jokes or kind of stories on themselves. Did you find the miners did a little of that?
Oh, yeah.
They kind of joked about it.
That's right. They were a pretty good bunch of guys, and they would see something funny. They didn't care who it was on. They'd tell it. Yeah.
There must have been a lot of stories and rumors that went around in that small community.
Oh,
that
yes.
Laughed about.
Well, you know, the first thing I told my wife when we got married, don't talk about anybody to anybody else, because if you do, they're all married to somebody in the family. And they're all together, because there was a lot of intermarriages in that. And in latter years, the Italians and the Greeks and the Americans, they all intermarried too.
When did they start kind of intermarrying? Were they intermarrying during the 30s?
Yes, I think it started right in around there, later on. Mm-hmm.
Cecil, did the Depression have any other effects on the people at that time?
Well, I think with some people, it just made them a little more conservative. They were always had that in their mind that there might be another one, and I think it made them save their money a little bit, a little more cautious of spending. I think it did have a tendency, and I think that I think it's always been there, kind of, you always like to have a little nest egg put away so that in case. I think that's one thing it done to people.
Was there anything during the Depression that you really wanted to have and you couldn't have, and after you got out of it?
Well, I don't think there was anything too great, only that we just liked to get a job, you know, a steady job. That was the main thing. But you see, before the Depression happened, the banks went broke too. The banks in Guernsey went broke. And the people that did have some savings lost their savings, and that was a bad feature too.
Did times get a lot tougher for you in the 30s? I know that times, a lot of times, were tough, even before, but yeah.
The 30s were tough because there just wasn't any work. There just wasn't any work. And Hank, we'd buy 100 pounds of potatoes for a dollar. I bought 100 pounds of onions for a dollar. I would drive the truck to Scott's Bus with a load of cattle, and I'd come home with 200 or 300 pounds of potatoes and onions, see?
Do you think people worried more about, were they going to have enough to eat? Did they try to do that, make sure that they stocked up on potatoes or onions?
Yeah,
or
stuff that was cheap, they would buy a lot of it if they could afford it. And a lot of people went out and picked. A lot of people went to the farms and picked this stuff too.
What about yourself? Do you think that if, even today, do you think you tend to try to stock up on things?
Well, we always kind of like to have plenty in the house, but that's more or less in the weather or something. See, but I think it makes you just a little bit more cautious. I used to drive the truck to Denver with a load of cattle, stop at Lafayette, pick up a load of coal, and I'd come back and sell that in Wheatland. Buy it right there at the mine and make a couple of bucks a ton on it.
Well, Cecil, you got through the Depression through those years, but were there people who just didn't make it through?
Well, I suppose there was, but close acquaintances with me, they all made it. They all made it. Some of them moved away during that time. Some of the railroaders went down into Arizona, worked in the copper mines down in there, different places like that. Some of them did move out.
Do they still talk about the Depression in those times today?
Not too much, because there's not too many of them left, you know, that remember that. It's kind of hard to find somebody that really came through that Depression. As a kid, kids didn't remember that too much because they went to school, they had everything, they had plenty of clothes. Now, maybe not plenty of clothes, but they had clothes. So they don't remember too much about it. You had to be in the working force at that time, I think, to remember it, and know that you couldn't find a job.
Did the men in any way try, or the families, did they try to cover up that fact they didn't have a job? I mean, was it?
No. Did you? Everybody was in the same boat, so there really wasn't. And it not only hurt the town of Sunrise, it hurt the town of Hartville and the town of Guernsey, too. It was because under normal circumstances, there was money spent in both towns, you see.
Were there things that you did to save? On your bills, or your food, or your
go out and chop wood, Of course, I never did that because I always had something to do. I wasn't making much money, but I was always had a little work to do.
Well, you know, like I suppose when the bills get a little higher today, people say we won't use the telephone as much.
Them days there was no telephones. So there was no telephone. There was one telephone in town that outside of the mining office. There was a telephone in the YMCA, and that was a pay phone. Doctor had a phone, but there was no phones that day.
I was wondering if there was any way you could cut your spending down.
Well, you just didn't. If you didn't drive your car, you didn't spend any money there. Which one year we never even took it out of the garage. We put it in the garage at sunrise and left it there. And we went to Wheatland, and if I needed a car, I used my father-in-law's car. But those were the toughies. Those were the tough days.
Do you think we'll ever see those tough times again?
No, I don't think I will. And I don't. There's too many built-in safeguards now. You've got your Social Security. That's a pretty good pump primer, if you call it a pump primer, because if the thing stays solvent, that's there all every month. And that's been keeps your community with a little economy. And you've got your unemployment. You've got your bank deposits. I think that's one of the big features, too, anymore, that you guarantee bank deposits. Insurance.
Now you mentioned your mother was living there, and you were bringing in a little bit of money and helping her through those years. Mm-hmm. Do you think the older people really suffered more during the Depression? That happened to them?
Well, I think so, because, of course, Sunrise was better than most places, because they had a doctor there to take care of, too. And the CF and I, we used to pay so much a month for a doctor up there, and he would take care of the family. And if you need aspirin or cough medicine, they supplied it. Those are the things that are pretty hard to realize today. And he took care of the old folks and would make house calls and stuff like that. So,
because I often wonder, what did older people do? They couldn't get out and work.
Couldn't work.
They didn't have TV like they do.
Yeah, they just didn't have anything. It was just living. That was all.
Didn't have any income because Social Security didn't come until 1935.
My mother never got a pension until, she got a county pension the last 6 months of her life, I think, and that was around $30 a month.
Did your mother live with you and your wife? Was that quite common for parents or one of the parents to live with?
That's right.
Was that hard on the young married people when their parents lived?
Yes, it was. It was hard. It was real hard because, you know, older people are very definite. And especially a mother and her son. They think that no woman's good enough for their son. And that was my mother, just the same as anybody else. And it took a long time for her. But before she passed away, she thought more of my wife than she did of her own children. Because my wife was good to her.
But overall, that I suppose, made it tougher in those years.
Yeah, it did.
It was hard times anyway.
Yeah.
And
if it wasn't for my mother, what I made the CC camp would have went to my wife. And it would have made it easier for us. And I wouldn't have had a house in Sunrise, I probably would have moved out. See? So I wouldn't have had that of a house over there and paying rent on that and buying coal and electricity for it. So it was a burden, but one that we accepted. There was no other way.
Compare that with today, where older people have so many more services.
County, or you've got your nursing home, you've got that. There was no such thing as a nursing home.
feel that, did the depression affect your life, do you think?
It probably made it better.
In what way?
Well, I think we kind of appreciated things when we begin to get them. I think we appreciated it. And I know I appreciate being able to live the way I'm living today. And whether I would have done that if it hadn't been for the depression or not, I don't know. We might have accepted it as a thing that was always here. And that's what I'm afraid with the younger generation, if they will accept this as there's nothing different. It's going to always be there, see. But it can be lost, I think.
You keep your sense of humor during the depression, yeah, season.
That's right. That's right. You had to do that. We had a lot of good times. It was, of course, when you're young, nothing is as serious as when you get older. Yeah, it makes a lot of
difference. So you're glad you went through it?
Yep. I'm glad I don't have to go through it at my age.
Cecil, we've covered a lot of things in discussion. Are there some things that maybe I've neglected, perhaps, in talking about the depression, or things that you remember that ought to be mentioned?
Oh, I would like to mention one character that I had in the CCC camp. And his name was Tom Carr. And he liked to drink. And he was what they call a leader in the CC camp over there when I was. And he about half fell in love with me. And anything that I wanted to do, he would do it. And even after I got out of the camp, he would come and see me. But it was always on Sunday morning after he got drunk. But he was a character. And anybody in the county of Platte County will remember Tom Carr. He'd get drunk and go to a rodeo, and he wanted to ride everything that was in the rodeo. He was a character. He's an Englishman, too. His daughter still lives in Guernsey. I'd like to mention him in that, because he was quite a guy.
Well, your wife also got through those years. I wonder if she saw things differently than you did.
Well, she could have, but we're pretty much of the same minds, I think, because we lived together so long. If she'd have to think like me, or I'd have to think like her, because after all these years, we kind of know what the other person's doing all the time, even when we're not together.
Cecil, I've enjoyed visiting with you, and I appreciate your own recollections of those years, especially in the Sunrise Mining area, because that was a little different part of the Depression than around here, where so many people were farmers.
That's right. That was quite a difference, because they still had their farms, and they were able to raise food.
Did you kind of envy a farmer? I mean, did you kind of say, gee, these farmers out here can at least have a garden, they raise their own cattle and eggs and chickens?
Well, I might have at one time, but my father-in-law bought 80 acres over there at Wheeling, and we planted that in the early 30s, and it was dry, and I never worked so hard in my life as trying to work them 80 acres, so I'm not very... I think the farmers got the toughest row in the country to hold.
You didn't have to worry about dust storms, did you?
We had it over there.
Did you?
Yeah, we were over south of Wheatland when the dust bowls blew. Our fence was covered with sand 3 feet deep.
Most miners never saw that, though.
No. The cemetery over it, the Wheatland Cemetery, was half of it was covered with sand 3 feet deep. I didn't think it would ever come out of it.
Cecil, thank you for visiting with me.
Thank you, and I hope I've done some good.